And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, we are at Groundhog Day. Everything you knew is happening all over again.
Yeah.
That's probably true across the board here. Right?
We're going to have more than 6 weeks more of politics. We're going to have 11 or 9 months more of politics.
Well, but we'll have an eternity more of politics, but if this particular politics, yeah. But in terms of things repeating themselves,
yeah.
Trump did say at the beginning, I could shoot somebody on middle of Fifth Avenue, and no, I wouldn't lose a single vote. And that's apparently what the Republican Senate agreed with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. They went along lock, stock, and barrel, except for two who broke ranks on the issue of whether we should be calling witnesses.
And, which is, it's hardly controversial, and it hardly speaks to the issue. I mean, calling witnesses. It's hard to imagine that could be controversial. Why, if you're having an inquiry into something, you call witnesses. You look at evidence. It's only if you're stymieing or trying to stymie looking into something that you say, no, we can't have witnesses. So they say, well, the House should have done it. The House's job was to bring the charge. The Senate's job is to do the trial.
Correct. And they've constantly avoided that. They've been in a constant search to find a viable excuse for what they're doing. They've been all over the lot, and they still haven't.
I think you're wrong. I think they did. I think that Dershowitz came up with the only possible solution. And I think they embraced it. And the solution was, if in his brain the president can convince himself that what he's doing is in the public interest, then it's legal, it's doable, it's not impeachable, it's correct. And it means the end of objective truth. It means the end of constitutional guarantees. It means the end of anything except right makes might. Might makes right.
Yeah, right. I think that was the thing that got the most pushback, but not for the Republicans. Although some of them kind of try to back off of that and find some other ground because of the startling nature of what that meant.
But that is what it means. And it means another thing. If he's right, if that argument is right, and it's embraced by the Republicans, that means that the American system is a system that within itself has no self-correcting mechanism. If the system has no self-correcting mechanism, then what you're saying is assassination is on the order of the day.
Well, that was Ben Franklin's argument at the Constitutional Convention when they were talking about whether we have something like impeachment. He said, what would be the alternative then to change government? And so they figured it out rather quickly.
That's right. But if you don't read and don't know history and can't think, you're bound to do the same thing again that was done in the past and do it worse.
Yeah.
As Marx once said, history repeats itself. Only the first time is tragedy and the second time is farce. These people are farcical. They are farcical. I mean, the contortions that a Dershowitz goes through is farcical.
Well, the whole legal team, but even more so were the senators.
Total disgrace.
And we'll see whether they pay a price. The thing was that a lot of them, or some of them, are retiring. Like Lamar Alexander, he didn't have to worry about any political ramifications. He's going to be gone next January.
Well, he was totally terrible. He said, of course Trump did these things, but the Constitution says the people should decide. First of all, the Constitution doesn't say the people should decide. The Constitution says the Electoral College should decide. And second of all, the Constitution says that there's an impeachment provision.
Right.
It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So much for Lamar Alexander, the moderate.
Well, yeah, moderate in this context of the Republican Party is kind of an oxymoron. We don't have that. The big consequence for voting to have one of the two to vote to have witnesses, Mitt Romney, was that he did not get invited to the CPAC convention.
That was the bad thing or the good thing?
Well, for him, it's probably a good thing. Yeah. Don't forget, he addressed it when he was running for president, said something like he's, you know, seriously conservative or what have
That's
you.
What he called himself, seriously conservative. That's the word, right. That was the phrase, seriously conservative. These Republicans have come up with a mangled English language, I'm telling you. Poetry does not flow from any of their lips.
Well, yeah. What was it, Mario Cuomo said, you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose?
Yes, but they don't campaign in poetry. And as far as governing is concerned, how about this? Isn't it the case that rape is considered by the people who study these things not a sexual crime, but a crime of domination expressed in sexual ways, right?
Yes.
So couldn't you say that Trump's whole approach to governing and all the people who follow him is a form of rape? Because his whole purpose, his whole policy is, I dominate you, whether it's in trade policy, military policy, political policy, in his relationships with human beings. It's all a form of rape. This is a government of rapists, as far as I can see.
Yeah. Well, of course, Trump's actions with women are one thing, but the Trump class of the millionaires and billionaires has done to the American treasury is certainly, I think, a form of rape.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What did they say was the rationale for these horrible tax cuts they gave, the 1%?
Well, there's a couple. Number one, it was going to pay for itself, which, of course, it didn't. We now have record deficits.
Right.
And remember, Trump said he was going to balance the budget within 8 years, and it's going the other direction. It's
right.
impossible to balance it at this point with
right.
what he's done, as what happened with Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. And then they were going to grow the economy at 3%, 4%, 5%, like
right.
it's never been seen before.
Right.
And it's growing at a rate that was less than the Obama presidency.
Right. Exactly. 2.1%, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, in the low twos.
Yeah.
The low twos. But it's what he's, you know, he's a master con man. So it's what he says that's reality rather than what he does or what effect it has.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the question is, will enough people wake up to that to do something about it? And as we know, in terms of his acolytes, the answer is Groundhog Day. No.
Right.
No matter what he does, they will back him and find an excuse for backing him.
So, all right. So now let me ask you the question. Taking a look at the impeachment process as a whole and how it's played out, should Nancy Pelosi have finally agreed to it? Should the Democrats have done it?
That I think is going to be left to see what happens in the election and how what effect it has. There's several things. Number one is the large part of the base of the Democratic Party was clamoring for this. And the progressive wing, certainly. I think that it would have been hard to resist. The second thing is that a good part of the more moderate base saw this as a constitutional issue that they were obligated to pursue, even if it didn't work out. And one of the third things we consider is, you know, the way things change from day to day in this country and in the world, by November, this may not be a big deal. Now, I expect that this week when Trump, it's going to be an interesting thing when Trump goes before Congress for the State of the Union. To see Nancy Pelosi standing there right behind him. And he's still under impeachment. The Senate isn't going to make its decision until the next day. And I think he might just come out and, you know, he's going to give, I think, a campaign speech, number one.
Well, he didn't last time.
I know, but he was. Don't forget, this is the election year.
Yeah.
And number two, you know, he's always been so in your face. Remember, the people thought that when he gave his inaugural address, it would be to reach out to people and to try to, you know, bring people in. That isn't his style. I think he's going to come out full bore and attack. The big question is, will he be able to get through the speech without slurring his words? And, you know, Bill Maher did a sketch on Friday night saying that Trump's brain isn't really working and had a montage of all the times he couldn't get the words out properly and had to back off.
Well, if you don't know what the words mean, it's hard to figure out how to say them.
Well, even these were simple words, you know, and they got mangled. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see, to see Nancy Pelosi standing behind the president on there. And on the other side, of course, is the vice president, who was named by Lev Parnas this week as a co-conspirator in the whole thing.
Well, so is the was the president's lawyer, Cipollone, according to Bolton, yeah, was part of the whole thing. That's an interesting thing, that one of the people implicated in the deed acts as the lawyer. Is that normally the case?
No. It reminds me of Devin Nunes, who did the same thing. You know, he sat there on the impeachment trial and never disclosed that he had been part of the defense,
right?
In essence. So, which goes to the total lack of ethics that we're seeing in, I guess that's Groundhog Day also in the Republican Party at that level.
So what happens with this group of people if they don't get reelected? And that is to say, what happens with the Republican Party in the absence of Trump being reelected?
You know, a lot of people say that it's finished. I don't think it'll ever go away.
Things don't finish. Things get overthrown. They don't finish on their own.
Yeah, but the billionaire class has to find somebody to carry its water. And
can they really trust the evangelical politicians like Pence? I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I think they'd have to switch to Democrats like Bloomberg.
Well, if they trusted Pence, they'd be for the impeachment because they'd get him as president.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, they might trust Pence. Don't forget, they're not the ones who are voting. The people in the executive suites have to rely on their operatives that they've put in power in the Congress. And the operatives in Congress have, in this respect, different interests than the people in the executive suites. They want to keep that job.
That's it.
Yeah. So that's a problem for them.
Yeah, well, a bunch of people that don't want to keep their job are going to be in the Iowa caucus this week.
They want to move up. That's right. Although that's impossible to tell, right? I mean, you can't tell what's going to happen there.
No, it's such, to use a term of art, fakakta.
Fakakt, exactly. Well, it's not really fakakt. I mean, there's a certain really interesting Democratic element to it because second choices and third choices count.
Yeah, it's like that voting system that they now have in Maine,
right?
Where you rank voting. It's essentially a ranked voting, but on the fly. You have your first person, and then if they don't get 15%, you have to move to someone else or drop out of the thing.
Right.
And if what I've seen, you know, Bernie seems to be have the momentum, and from what I've seen, he probably has a better organization, certainly a more enthused organization It would not surprise me if he did very well in Iowa.
Well, he'll do very well. It's really, to me, a question of whether the John Delaney vote will be enough to tip it in favor of Joe Biden.
Yeah, he came out this week when he decided not to run, and he didn't endorse anybody, but he pointed to what he thought were more moderates. The bigger question, of course, is whether how big a chunk Elizabeth Warren takes out of the Bernie vote. And she's been fading very badly, and what that means. Because if she loses to Bernie in both Iowa and New Hampshire, I mean, it's pretty...
Well, she's out.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty sure. And what this has been looking like is it's going to, from the very beginning, it's going to come down to Bernie and Biden, except now with Mike Bloomberg. He's rising. He's putting ads out there. He's going to have an ad in the Super Bowl. That's very, very interesting. He's spending about $11 million for an ad that features an African-American woman who lost a relative to gun violence. And, you know, that's certainly, in one way, it's not the demographic that you usually see in the Super Bowl to get to. On the other hand, he's reaching out to African-American women. So he's kind of looking past Iowa and New Hampshire and looking at South Carolina and Nevada.
But I can't imagine that he's going to do anything in South Carolina.
No. No, he isn't. That's going to be Biden.
That's Biden. Unless Biden does so poorly and Bernie does so well that, you know, some small percentage of African-American voters in South Carolina leave Biden and move and either don't vote or move over to Bernie. But either way, Biden wins. It's just a question of overwhelming in South Carolina, overwhelmingly or big. If big, I don't think that's going to be good enough for him.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. We've been waiting for this for a long time.
Meanwhile, despite the fact that he's an ignorant rapist, the president, Mr. Trump, continues to degrade public policy. He continues with his attack on the water purity, on air purity. He continues with his attack on fighting discrimination in housing, which he does.
Right.
He continues his orthodox Republican approach. You know, he claims to be an unorthodox Republican, but all his policies are really the orthodox corporate Republican approach. And you can see it with his so-called deal of the century, which landed with a big flop and fart, as far as I can see.
Well, yeah, and it was about a half-day story because of all the other things that were happening.
Yeah.
Now, you know, remember he said, well, he'd go in the Middle. Well, he is fulfilling one promise. He said he would have a different approach to the Middle East, but that he could get a deal because he's the great deal maker. And this was going to be, you know, they were going to get it right away. They were going to put this thing together. And, of course, they didn't. It took them a couple of years. They hid the report while the Israeli elections were going on last year. But the Israelis weren't able to, you know, if you think we've got a system that's in political chaos, you've got Israel, which has had two elections and still hasn't been able to reelect prime minister, and is going to have a third one in a month or so.
And probably still won't elect a prime minister. Of course, nothing happened.
Right. Of course, the plan, the Palestinians wouldn't participate in the plan at all. The part of the plan, the economic part, the Arab countries did have some input into. They were asked to pony up, was it $50 billion in order to do economic development or anything. You know, politically, this plan isn't going to really do much for solving the problems.
Oh, I think this map, I mean, this plan will do, if the Likud sticks with it and implements it, I think this map, which I saw, which embodies the plan, guarantees that the two-state solution is dead and gone, and that the Palestinian struggle becomes a struggle for equal rights in a unitary state. I think that is the actual outcome of this plan.
Well, it could be that. That's what a lot of people are predicting. You know, how the Israelis are able to finesse that, if they ever are, it'd be interesting. I don't think they
You can't finesse that. You can't.
I don't think you can.
No.
I don't think you can. But don't forget, we're here because the Palestinians, the Arabs, have never agreed to any plan for the partition of the land. They rejected it in the idea first 100 years ago with the League of Nations. They rejected the Peel Report in the 30s from the Brits, who had the mandate. They rejected the UN plan and lost territory and created refugees. The PLO came out and said, we don't want a country on the West Bank and in Gaza. We want a country where Israel is. That's their original charter. And they had a second war in 67, and then they lost that land. They were, you know, there was part of that a settlement that Jimmy Carter had at Camp David between Israel and Egypt, but the Palestinians wouldn't go along with anything, so they abandoned that. Bill Clinton had a close, you know, to an agreement as he was leaving office that Arafat wouldn't go along with. It was, what, 95% of or 97% of the land. Ehud Barak had another plan that gave them more land, and they rejected everything. They've always played for all or nothing, and they keep winding up with bubkas. And talk about Groundhog Day. Every time they do, as Brett Stevens pointed out in the New York Times this week, they wind up with less.
Yes, they wind up with less, but guess what? They don't disappear.
No.
And in this world, they're there. And if they're there, if you can't kill them and you can't expel them, you got to live with them, even if they don't agree with you. And even if you don't want to do that, those are your choices. So there they are. It's useless to say they won't agree. They don't agree, but you can't banish them. So now what? Right?
Well, that's...
You may have all the arguments on your side. Listen, I offered to do all these things, but they didn't agree. Oh, it takes two to tango. They don't agree. You got to find some way, and there's three ways. Kill them, get rid of them, or figure out a modus vivendi, a way to do it. But the Israeli government doesn't have a way to figure out a modus vivendi, because they also, for them, it's also all or nothing. Because you can't have a Jewish state in a country that has a lot of non-Jews unless somehow or other those non-Jews don't count. And people who live someplace usually want to count. They don't want to not count.
Well,
that's a problem.
Well, that's Groundhog Day.
Yeah. That's Groundhog Day. Right. Exactly.
I said that the Palestinian problem was that they never agreed to build a Trump Tower or a Kushner housing project in Ramallah or Bethlehem.
There you go. That's it.
You know that. Yeah. You know, that's the way the Qataris did it, right? They bailed out Kushner.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, they're smarter than the Palestinians in that regard. yeah. That's, well, what have you there? Meanwhile, overseas, the Brexit starts.
Brexit starts. Well, it starts. Who knows what it means? Who knows what a start means? Who knows where it goes? Who knows how it finishes?
Well, that's another Groundhog Day, because there's always been that issue whether Britain should be part of Europe in many ways. You know, they've wanted the cake and eat it, too. They wanted that separation, but they wanted the economic benefits. And now they've kind of cut out their, you know, they're in a new experiment after decades of being part of the European Union, essentially. Now, we'll see what happens. They may lose Scotland. They may lose Northern Ireland.
They've already lost a lot of jobs. They've already lost. There's been an out-migration of financial companies that have moved over to the out of London into new financial centers on the continent because, frankly, the market is in Europe. It's not in England. So they moved out. It's a remarkable situation because the people who promoted Brexit acknowledged in the end that they had no plan for doing it, had no idea how it could be done or if it could be done. And at this moment, as you and I are speaking, there's no plan for doing it.
No.
So, but they, you know, but they talk big, like they, like they do know what they're doing.
They didn't expect to win.
They did not expect to win. That's right.
Sort of like Trump.
Yes. But yes, but with even more dire consequences, because the United States is a gigantic economic and military power, but Britain is a third-rate power. The only way that you can support Brexit in England is if you have an illusion that somehow the British Empire is waiting to be reborn if only you get out of the European Union. And a lot of people in England do think that. But guess what? They're going to discover they have all the significance of Belgium.
Well, Belgian waffles, right?
Yeah, Belgian waffles. You got it. You got it.
Okay. You know, well,
how about
we go,
Pennsylvania? How about Pennsylvania? Yeah. We only have a few minutes left, but things are happening here.
Yeah, well, things are happening. First of all, this week, the governor unveils his budget. It will be like all gubernatorial budgets, DOA and the legislature. But in talking to some of the people in Harrisburg, they don't expect it to be as contentious. The Democrats are trying to win control of at least one of the houses of the legislature. They have an outside shot of the second one. If they do, next year's budget will probably include a fracking tax. But until then, things continue to be convoluted and problematic for the state. But
well, the state needs a fracking tax. It needs some jolt of revenue. The schools need it. Everybody needs it. I mean, there's just the revenues are just not there.
Yeah, and I was trying to explain to somebody this week that the state only pays about 34%, 34% of the school budgets. They should be paying 50%, and that's why local property taxes are so high.
And they used to pay 50.
Right. Now, talk about local taxes. Lackawanna County, the new commissioners this week reopened the old budget and imposed an 11% tax increase across the board. The more interesting thing was that just like the last time, you had a Democrat and a Republican ganging up on another Democrat and making the other Democrat a minority. So we'll see how long that goes. On that.
Well, let me ask you: Do the commissioners in Lackawanna County have an option? I mean, I understand that one of the commissioners voted against it, but was that a vote because she really had an idea for how to do it without the tax increase, or she just was stubborn?
Well, the thing is, they needed what they did is what the previous administration should have done is properly fund the pensions and make sure it was fiscally sound without borrowing money. And maintaining the bond rating,
could they do it without raising the taxes like these people?
No. So not without making some cuts.
So the tax increase was absolutely necessary.
But of course, it doesn't play well. It doesn't.
Of course, it doesn't play well. But you.
And. We'll see. One of the the freshman legislator, Bridget Kozorowski, got an opponent this week. Jim May from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation resigned and is going to go after her with, he hopes, help of the evangelical vote.
And you're running for an alternate delegate to the Democratic Convention.
Right.
In fact, all of the election stuff is starting, ending at February 17th, right? All the petitioning.
Right. Matt Cartwright's got opponents. The Republicans are splitting on that. At least the veterans are splitting on that. It's going to be an interesting year. Meanwhile, somebody who got elected to the Scranton School Board resigned. Number three. It's the third resignation in the last year.
All right. That's all for this week. We're done. See you next week.
We're resigned.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.